A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
All right.
And Ash Millman.
Hello.
Do you guys like the consoles?
I love a good console, mate.
Why?
Why?
Yes.
Because I've had consoles all my life. Literally since I was a wee lass, I've always had consoles. My very first console was Game Boy Pocket.
Nice.
I loved it. And the most recent one I bought was the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
Ash, what do you think of the old physical consoles?
I love consoles. I love them. I just think they're lovely. It's like when you have a little present and you open it, it's another box inside. Uh-huh. But the box plays games, so it's really good. I just think they're really nifty.
So the reason I open with that is because the trailer came out for it a few days ago, but there's a new quote-unquote console, that is a little console, coming called the Playdate, made by Panic Software, who initially used to be a games publisher. They did like Firewatch and a few other different things. And they said, look, we're big nerds. We have a lot of money. Let's make a fun thing. And they've made like a little handheld console with a crank on the side, which seems to be the main thing that a lot of the write-ups have been focusing on.
Has there ever been a console that has a crank on it? Is this the first
a crank on it? I don't think so.
Yes,
there's been nearly all the additional fishing software games always had little cranks on them.
Oh yeah, I played a fishing one. My dad used to have one. That was great. I love a crank.
Yeah,
I'm absolutely here for this crank just from that.
Well, that's what I think they're they're going for. They need a little random thing that makes it differentiate. But yeah, I don't. As far as I know, no main games ever had a dedicated crank on it. But these guys are going for that. But that made me just sort of go down the route of, because it's the most unexpected thing. Random little handheld with a dedicated piece of hardware thing to it. Maybe sort of go down the route of we have, we have Google Stadia and we have all these different potential moves into streaming and is that the future of the industry? This made me more excited than the entirety of the Google Stadia thing. So that's kind of what I'm opening with. What do you guys think of that?
I think we as gamers, I don't know, a lot of us are collectors as well. A lot of us really appreciate having physical media. That's why I think digital gaming is, doing pretty well, but physical is still selling because so many of us do care about physical things. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit easier to get excited for something that you can hold in your hand
a crank on it,
than just digital and streaming stuff, in my opinion.
Yes.
I don't know, because you can see it and feel it, and it's more sensory.
Well, see,
the jokes.
No, but it's true though. It's the argument when the Kindle sort of blew up, and it was like, well, does anybody still value books? And I would say that they do. I like the whole, I like holding a book. I like the physicality of it.
I prefer a book too.
Yeah, and so I think gaming's kind of reaching that same point where especially with PlayStation Now or Game Pass or whatever, it's like you have an entire library of games that you can just access. But is that as worthwhile or as satisfying as having a collection? Because that's what we grew up with.
Yeah, I think that is entirely the thing. Both of what you guys said, it's about having a collection, about having the bits and pieces. We had the PlayStation Classic as a little Christmas gimmick with all of the old games on it and that sort of thing. And they're always releasing Mega Drive mini consoles.
I
had so many in my wardrobe of just these little old, have all the games on them, but you can take them and play them in the car.
Like a palm-sized thing.
Yeah. The cool thing about the Mega Drives that they did was that they still played your old cartridges. Whereas with the PlayStation, that didn't really have that. It was essentially just a wee SD card in a box.
Cute though.
It was cute. But what I really liked about the Mega Drive that they made was that it could, all your your old collections that you hung on to all these years. You can play them now on a HDTV.
There's quite a few, like, especially third-party ones, where you can just buy like a box that'll have a whole bunch of slots in the top, and you can just put any old-school cartridge into it. Like,
right.
As someone who's been trying to get a refurbished N64, like, I've started getting lost in the, like, you know, 7-in-1 systems that'll play like NES cartridges, SNES, and Game Boy Color and everything else. But in going from like marketplaces and different shops in the town and stuff that we live near to, like, they have, you know, just seeing like these big collections of like all these old school cartridges and all that sort of stuff, that is, for me, is extremely heartwarming. But I don't know if that's because I have a tie to it generationally. Like, do you guys think there's always going to be a place for collections of physical media?
But the thing is, I think if you look at vinyls now, like with music,
that's a good point.
I didn't grow up with vinyls. None of my family collects vinyls or anything, but it's absolutely ingrained in our like modern culture to go back and go, wow, this was a really cool concept, we should keep doing that. And people still go back and buy PlayStation 1s, buy PlayStation 2s, get collections of games that they can show off. I think physical media is always going to have a place, because as like a gamer, we're a bunch of nerds who like showing things off that we're interested in. Yeah. Like, go to any of our houses, they're absolutely covered in like crap. Like,
Scott really has nice a whole crap, room of it.
I do, to be honest. When I finally moved into my house with my lovely wife, we'd literally dedicated one room to just everything.
Yeah.
Just bought a bunch of bookshelves and just was like, right, we're going to make this a big nerd room. And it sort of just looks like Tywin Lannister's like basement or whatever.
Yeah. I have two glass cabinets in my room.
Yeah.
Full of stuff. But yeah, you've hit it on the head there. I think we just like to have stuff.
I think so. I mean, like, one of the quotes that from Sony's Jim Ryan, he reckons that we're moving into the streaming era. He's the streaming era is upon us. And like, I think for me, I want them to coexist, because I think something like the vinyl thing kind of shows that people do want to actually like hold and, you know, have their collections represented as something other than just tiles on a screen. I don't know if you guys have, like, if your opinions on it have changed over time, because initially for me, I was like, I don't want anything digital at all. But then sometimes you do just want to switch from one game to the next, and it's that easy.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. More so when I got the Switch, I think, because I have a nice case for my Switch that all the games sort of fit into. But there's just something really nice about switching from my cartridge, just knowing that I've got games on the system that I don't have to bother like taking the cartridge out. So I started buying stuff on that. Obviously, the PlayStation sale has seen me.
Yes.
And I got a new PC last year as well. So I obviously have a bunch of, you know, PC games aren't physical. So I'm more open to it these days than I was, but I still would prefer physical if
that
possible.
Thing that, like, rolling the sales into it, because like the Playdate thing, we can talk more specifically about that, but the way that they're going to roll their games out is that, one, it's £150, which we'll get back to. We'll get back to it, Rach. But that whole thing comes with, I think they've announced like it's like 20-ish games or something, but they're going to roll them out across like sequential weeks.
12,
But like something like the sale mentality and like that idea of everything being digital, for me, I tend to hoard stuff way more than I ever did when I was in physical, even though I do have these big collections of things. When everything is available digitally, you don't make a point of getting through it as much. I don't know if that's the same with you guys.
How many games have you bought and never played?
I've always played
because
them.
Because they were on sale.
Yeah. I always, because I'm, well, my thing now, that's another thing with the advent of everything being digital, is that I'm sort of building like a big library of licenses. Like, I'm just like, oh, well, I'll buy that because then I'll own the license for it going forward. And I can, at some point, there'll be a console that'll play everything.
Yeah.
And I can just, you know, go back to Red Faction Armageddon or something.
That's weird.
I don't know. Yeah,
that is
so,
a
like,
strange little hobby.
Why
to
is
have,
that strange?
Just license collecting.
That's one of all the licenses. Do you guys not find yourself doing that with, like, if
No.
Why not?
I think my approach to things is a lot more casual than your guys sometimes, though. But like, for me, my opinion flip-flops a lot between physical and streaming, just because I think the usefulness of streaming is so good, and I do think it's where the industry is going to head. But what I want is it just in really cool like boxes, so that so that it still looks really interesting, and to just don't sell me the game, just sell me the game box. So
what
I
do you think of? Go on.
I bought a Pokemon game once that was a code in a box, Pokemon Silver.
Yeah,
that's weird. That's
it was
when
a code in a box. It was great.
Yeah, when retailers do that, though, where it's like, here's a box, but it's inside is just the code, so you can go online and download it.
I got to keep the box.
Yeah, it's nice.
Was that good, though?
Yes.
Just pretend that it's your thing on the shelf. And
it's on my shelf.
Potentially a game in there. It's like, is it just the visuals of a collection?
It's shiny.
Yeah, super shiny. The one of the other things that I was going to mention is something like the PlayStation TV. That was Sony going like, well, we can just ship DualShock controllers and you'll hook them up to a little box, like essentially treating like a PlayStation as like a set-top box.
Yeah.
But what do we think of that? That idea of like just having a controller on the side next to your TV remote and you just play it through the TV. Like, how much do we actually want the console?
Ooh, I don't know. I think that that's a really cool and good idea, but like, the further
it failed for them.
The further you move away from it, then the less we have, and it's the stuff, isn't it? It literally is just stuff that we're after here. And I think consoles are great. I think they're wonderful. I think it's nice being able to turn something on and have it as a gaming system that is just for gaming. Like, I own so many different consoles, even though I could get all the different games on like the Xbox One or the PlayStation 4. I have like the, all of their generational corpses in the background so I can go back and play actual PS2 games on an actual PS2 and stuff.
Yeah.
But in theory, it would be lovely to have them all in one place. It really would.
That's the thing. Do you find yourself going back to old stuff? Because Rachel was saying before we came in that you've owned a lot of consoles, and so do I, but like hardly any are actually hooked up.
I think I own almost every console.
Neo Geo?
Well, I never ever had a GameCube. That was the big one. Didn't have a PS1, didn't have a Dreamcast.
I mean, you've said the thing, and then you haven't got the biggins. You've got a PS1.
I mean, like, these days.
Okay, cool. You did have a PS1 at some point in your life.
No.
What?
What the hell, Shackleton?
I was a Nintendo baby. I got into PlayStation when I played my friend's Spyro, and then I got a PS2.
Good, okay.
And then, of course, Spyro.
To be fair, I didn't have an N64, so.
Spyro wouldn't save on it, would it? Anyway, that's another topic for another time. Bring back memory cards?
Oh, my God. I have a real problem with that recently. Sorry, I keep playing PS1 games and going back and being like, I don't have my PS1 memory card. I can't even save it.
Oh, God.
Just trying to start over and over
there's
again.
There's like a weird nostalgia to that, though, because I remember like going to a friend's house with, like, you take your games and your little, like, stash of memory cards.
The game box had a wee slot you could put your memory card in.
But those things, like, those are the sorts of things that make me, like, you know, it makes me, my heart warm for the old school and nostalgia. But in reality, like,
it's really difficult and annoying. Like, in reality, like, the way that it's progressed has been really good. I think the PS2 is the ultimate system because like you can have all the memory cards that fit everything. It plays all the plays all the generational games like of PS2 and PS1. Mm-hmm. So that's what you want for something like,
and DVDs.
Exactly. Entertainment
that
system.
That hot new commodity DVD.
So you want something that can do all that if you do have a physical collection. I think it's letting go that's a problem, because if you brought upon a collection, you have a massive bookshelf full of all your different games, all your different DVDs, all your different everything, saying, right, this is actually pointless, get rid of it. You go, no, like, no way.
Because, like, have you guys done, because, like, that's kind of, like, a wider sort of, like, shift in mentality. It's, like, something like Marie Kondo's show on Netflix is, like, you know, you want to drill down, like, does this thing provide me with joy? If not, you get rid of it. And I know a few people in the office have done that and got rid of, like, the overall clutter. Have you guys done that? Because I haven't yet.
Oh, you should see my clothes drawers. They're so beautiful. They are so beautiful. I did it the other day and I had everything in neat little piles.
Specific folding.
Oh, God, it was so good. It was liberating. I treat my clothes with respect. I smooth them out. And I was like, the joy, I feel it.
I like that approach. But like, whereas Rachel, you're hoarding everything.
No, I'm not a hoarder. I am. I'm cozy in the middle, I would say. Sometimes I'm really good at throwing stuff out. If it can be recycled, it's gone. But I'm really bad for hanging on to things as well.
Do you guys keep the boxes? Because I would keep the console boxes.
No, I don't
be like,
keep the boxes.
Well, I might need to do something.
I have all of my boxes for everything. Because I've always been brought up with my family being like, keep the box. So when
that's
you want to
I
sell
have,
it, it's always worth it more. So I've got all of my Game Boy Advance boxes still.
Nice.
Like,
heck.
Literally, they're all in a little pile. So yeah.
If you keep them in pretty like, mint condition, then like the stupid irony of it is that I have the same thing where it's like, oh, keep the box because you might want to sell it. So you keep it in mint condition.
Yep.
But if you treat it with that much respect, you're probably going to hang on to it. Like, why would you get rid of it if you treasure it that much to hang on to it in the first place? But I don't know if that's the same like sort of general mentality that you guys have in terms of why you would keep a physical collection, knowing that you might have never ever go back to it. It's just nice to have.
Yeah. Kinda. The thing is, though, we're saying this. We're all like 20 plus. Mm-hmm. Kids don't care.
Mm. Do they not, though?
Kids are going to be 20 plus one day, and they're not going to be caring. So
they'll be living in the hologram world at that point.
What we're saying is, like, because we care about physical, and we're sort of warming to digital, warming to streaming. I don't... gaming, streaming, though. I don't...
We can talk about that for a bit, because I think it's weird. I think it's just because the technology's not there yet.
The internet's no there yet. Like, I mean, I've got 70 down, and I don't think I could even stream games at my house. But, like, kids are going to have that. They are going to have better internet, and streaming is probably going to take over in the next 20 years.
Yeah, that's the thing. And it's like, that's like an infrastructural thing. Like if the country in question is equipped to, you know, to deliver streaming, it just works. Then does that remove the need for like a console altogether?
Yeah.
Like, do we even
great
like
for
it
Norway. Great for Norway. Great for Denmark.
Great for San Francisco as well. These things are coming from.
I find it really strange that you say that you kind of off put to the thought of streaming, like as a streamer, like that's
talking about streaming games.
No, there's so many people in that audience who are going to be, that's going to be their experience of games, is watching you play them like while streaming.
No, when I say streaming, I mean playing a game, like I believe it was on PS Now, started this way, where you wouldn't download the game, you would play it, you'd stream it in real time. So that's what I mean by streaming.
You mean like streaming libraries, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, were we talking about live streaming?
No, it can kind of be both. It's just that idea of like streaming in general, getting rid of the need for a physical product. But like as streaming becomes more infrastructural, then...
Yeah, yeah, because there's a whole new way of playing games, whereas you don't play them, you watch someone else play them is what I'm thinking, like, which is another part of the future.
Kinda.
Yeah, I really hope not, because then people won't buy games.
That was the thing. If they go down, because we've done another podcast on this before, but if they go down the whole, you know, like PlayStation or Xbox is just an app, then like how much brand loyalty do you have to that sort of thing, and how much longevity does it even have if it's not represented in real time?
There's something to be said about if everything goes all digital. How nice is the design of a lovely PlayStation 4 Pro? How nice is that box just sitting under your TV? Yeah. Just when you said there about it all being on the same thing. I wouldn't have my big, nice shaped box.
Well, that's the thing. It's like that's why like I'm attracted to that. I like that. But it's like I wonder how much, like you said, I wonder how much the younger generation even cares, because it is just taking up space. And if you go down the route of like, you know, eventually you sort of go like anti-consumerist mentalities and stuff, then it's like, well, we don't need this clutter. We just sort of did at one point in time.
Oh, that's true. It'd be very good for the environment if they ditched consoles. Mm-hmm. It'd be very good if they ditched discs and cartridges and boxes.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I just don't, like, for the love of gaming that, like, I have, and I think that we have, kind of comes from, like, especially, if, like I said, if you go back into one of those shops and you see all those old cartridges and discs and cases and everything, like, you know, you, for the most part, know where you were when you played that thing.
Yeah.
And you sort of, like, remember holding it or, like, buying it from the shop and driving home and all that kind of thing. And I think there's a lot of, like, I don't know, that helped us become gamers and sort of, like, gave us more investment in the medium. So for me, it's not essential, but I have a lot of... You know, I have so many memories attached to physical media.
I think my physical collection, compared to your guys, is definitely, like, really small. Like, and only keep things that, like...
it's not the size.
It's how you use it.
But, yeah, it's, like, I have the things that I really, really loved and that I want on, like, disc. Mm-hmm. But then everything else, I just swap. So I think, for me, physical stuff, I think... For me, maybe for future generations and stuff as well, a really good way of keeping both would be bring back rental systems again.
I was just going to say we could talk about trade-ins. That
yes,
say?
Renting. I mean, because renting is obviously available digitally. You can rent. You can definitely rent movies on like Amazon and stuff like that. I don't know if you can rent games.
Sadly, not. The nearest thing to like a renting mentality is that you can have it for a bit and then
membership.
Xbox. Yeah, there is like the sort of the monthly stuff, or like Xbox and Steam will let you play it for a certain amount of hours and then you can just refund it again if it's not something that you like.
Yeah, or you could just get like Xbox Live for 1 month. Oh, sorry, Like EA Access, perhaps, for 1 month.
Yeah, like Origin or whatever. There are ways to to try stuff out, but it's nowhere, because that's the thing. Infrastructurally, when we were growing up, like, you could get a game, you trade it in, it's worth something. Mm. Yeah. Like, now if you try and trade a game in, they'll give you, 50 pence or whatever.
Well, it depends on the game.
Well, you might get a quid if you're lucky.
Supply and demand. Nintendo games are good for trading in.
Nintendo's pricing is ridiculous,
though.
I like
to buy physically because I like trading in, because I cannot always afford a £50 game. So if I know I've had a game that will trade in for £20, then
Because I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel way de-incentivized to trade anything in anymore, because I don't feel the worth is there, whereas it used to be across the 2000s and the 90s. And that's the same with you guys. When was the last time you traded something in?
I trade in all the time. If I buy something new, I'll buy it new, so it's 50, 60 quid, play it, and then trade it in for the 30 quid back, so it's half the price.
Okay.
Because if you want to play everything then you've got to... yeah.
That's what I used to do. I think, I guess one of them is just that it's changed a little bit just because of the jobs that we do, and we're lucky enough to get code supplied to us and stuff. So sometimes that'll kind of change it around. But overall, the industry is trying to move away from trade-ins because then they can't monopolize the price points.
That's the thing. Trade-ins make money for places like GameStop, but they don't make money for publishers.
Yeah, they would rather sell you it through the digital storefront, which is another reason why I would like the physical side of it to mean something. So that you actually, as a consumer, have worth. You can trade that back in. Mm. Whereas that goes away if everything's digital.
It feels like a big underground black market when you're doing it at CEX. I love it. I absolutely love it. I'm ooh.
Actually, as well, we can talk about the retro market as well. Because I said, I'm going to get an N64 because I never played Super Mario 64, and which I know is sacrilege.
Oh, I can't believe
it. I know. You didn't have a PlayStation, so it's fine.
Good for you.
But still, I'm trying to get an N64 to play play Super Mario 64, Mario Kart and F-Zero and all the things that I missed out on across the 90s because I was too busy playing Crash or Tekken 3.
Get Yoshi's Story.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll be coming to you for recommendations.
Yeah, so. I love the N64. Get GoldenEye. Anyway, go on.
So when you start going down that route, though, there are so many shops now in terms of the physical media that specialize in retro stuff. Mm. Like when me and my wife's planning a honeymoon to New York, and ordinarily, if you just search nerd shops, geek shops in New York, there are tons of retro shops.
Must have missed that when I was there.
It's pretty good. Well, it looks pretty good.
There's something attractive about you want to go in and just look as well, even if you're not going to buy anything.
See, and it's because when I went to France, I managed to get a copy of the original Sonic, which isn't that old, but the first Sonic on the Mega Drive, and it's the physicality of it. It's a big, chunky, videotape style box with a big, chunky cartridge inside of it. And so I'm quite looking forward to going back to that side, having cartridges and that kind of thing. But that's just me missing it. I don't know if there's any appeal to that for someone who never had it in the first place.
Ooh, I think trying to start a collection now is too much. Personally, if I wanted to go back and look at old consoles and everything, there's a piece of me that would be well, I could just play something more recent that has the functionality to go a bit back and I can get everything in one go. So I think it's greediness in that sense, because you're like, oh, I can just get it all in one place and there's one thing. Whereas... a collection would be really nice, but just hard to do now.
But that's but that's kind of the thing, is that a lot of these retro shops have sort of popped up to supply that older need for physical media that the AAA industry is obviously moving away from. The gaming industry wants to go into digital pricing and everything. Mm. But if you're determined enough, you can totally get an N64 fresh now and just pretend it's 1997 or whatever it was and just sort of get stuff from then. But I guess in terms of the functionality and everything, a lot of the stuff that Sony's been saying is they think that there's need for one more console. That'll be the PS5 and that'll be the last thing. And so after that, it'll just be digital libraries and physical and stuff.
I have to agree. Even with us, the onset of the PS5, I'm do we need the PS5? I mean, I have a Pro. Look at me, I have a PS5.
I also have a Pro.
And it's lovely. I mean, I don't really look at it and think I need more.
You're not missing anything.
I'm not missing anything. I don't even have a 4K monitor, and I'm pretty happy with it. So even with the PS5, I'm woo, is this too soon for this? So that being the last console makes sense to me.
Well, that was the thing at the start of this generation. The reason that so many games took ages to come out was because apparently, this is all coming from me listening to different podcasts from long-standing journalists who apparently had the inside word as to the general mentalities from the developers, was that they didn't really think that the PS4 or this generation of consoles was going to matter. They thought everything was moving towards PC gaming. And that was why a lot of when the PS4 did start selling like crazy, they all kind of went, oh God, and just sort of ran and said, okay, let's make some games and whatever. Yeah. And then it took them, 2 years or whatever. We had that really weird sort of half-baked first year.
Actually, that's the thing. You might have touched on something there. I think there always will be a console market, because a gaming PC, for example, £1,000.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want a PC game. PlayStation 4. I don't want to tweak the sliders and the stuff.
PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
When it came out, but £300 maybe? Oh no, maybe not when it first
launch,
came out.
It was more
no,
like
not at launch. You're right, you're right. Yeah. Yeah, it was a bit more at launch.
Point being though, that like, you know, those unit prices are way higher than in an individual
game.
Yes,
and you don't have to keep upgrading them. You don't have to like, if one component of it fails, like a PC so often does. I think there always will be that market for consoles, for physical stuff.
Well, I hope so. Like, because I think as gaming's got bigger and it's got more mainstream, then you more people who want to just play a game can just pick up a console and play it. Like, even me, who's been gaming my whole life, I don't want to go into PC gaming. Like, I know you're way more cool and confident with PC gaming.
Scott just called me cool.
In terms of gaming. I'm not cool. But yeah, I think...
like, you specify that.
I'm gonna run it back.
Do you think that maybe, like, with consoles and stuff, it'll turn to a more PC-geared thing where you can upgrade different things? I know you can upgrade hard drives.
Well, that's what the pros, like, trying to go towards, like, a half-step system.
Swap things out.
Yeah, well, I don't know if... Yeah, that's like one of the things. It's like, would they ever do like a, like, you know, they say they just call it the PlayStation and like it comes out like 2020 or
sexy,
whatever.
Sexy, that's good.
They just sort of like own it. And then they go, okay, well, this year we're doing like a new disc drive for it. And then they make it in a way that makes it modular. Mm. Like, I don't even know if that, is that appealing to you guys? Like, if I'm going to buy something like that, then you're pretty much making me a PC gamer at that point. Mm. If I'm trading things out every now
and then. I don't think they would do that because they would not make as much money if they brought out a whole new console. Yeah. So I don't think they would do that. But I think for that market, people who would be interested in that would have a PC.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, but that's what they thought was going to happen. Like, if you're taking gaming seriously, then you're gaming on PC. And it's like, there are like lots of, even when it comes to emulation and like, you know, even if I want to go play Super Mario on the N64, the N64 version of Super Mario 64, then it's easier to go and emulate it than it is to go and dig out an old N64. And so
it's
like,
not the same,
you know,
though.
Well, that's the thing, right? And it's like, what is that value? Like, drilling that down, like how much value does that sort of like feeling even have, like in an era of like streaming and emulation and all that sort of thing?
I don't know. Is it really, it just boggles me like thinking about it, because I feel like I sit on both sides of it. It's like, physical media is wonderful, but I think the choice is what matters at the end of the day. Right. It's the people who want physical stuff should be able to get it. Even if it does become a bit harder to source, it should always be there as like something you can always go back to and have that's tangible. It's like, I do gaming. Look at my discs.
Like, have you guys had it? Because we obviously we do a whole bunch of lists and like we put out a lot of stuff and we talk about a lot of old games. Have you guys ever wanted to go back to something older and then you just can't get to it? Like, because for me, the Final Fantasy VII remake's coming out soon.
Oh.
So, like, I've been playing back. Final Fantasy VII is easily available everywhere. Like, I think it's, like, you can play it on the wall around the corner. But, like, they did a spin-off in the 2000s called Crisis Core, which is, like, this separate sort of story-based thing.
Is that the movie, is it? Or
no, that's Advent Children.
Oh, sorry.
Well, Spirits Within was earlier, actually.
Oh, I love Spirits Within.
Oh, you don't love Spirits Within, Ash.
I like Spirits Within.
Stop it. Go watch Advent Children.
Mum and Dad are fighting again.
Oh, it's a bad time. But, so, yeah, across the 2000s, they had a whole bunch of, like Final Fantasy VII based media spin-offs, and they did one called Crisis Core, which is the story of a certain character that mastered the plot and whatever, but that's only on PSP. Like,
Sephiroth?
Literally.
Was it Sephiroth?
It was. I was saying clear as spoilers. It's,
I like
it's
Sephiroth.
The man with the black hair. You know the big plot centric?
No.
You know, man?
No.
Big guy with black hair?
But man Ash said something earlier about like wanting to just wait until like it's new and shiny, and I totally feel that way about Final Fantasy VII. I just could not, I can't be bothered playing the old one when it's, look at your face!
No, you can't play the new one for that!
I can't be bothered playing the old one. I just want to play
It's like saying you watch like the remake of Total Recall and you're not going to watch the original one or something.
Oh, I totally have only seen the remake.
No! Oh my god,
this is bad.
That's actually, oh
this
my
is
god,
a bad time.
That's really hurt me. That more than the Final Fantasy stuff.
So there is a lot of value to the original thing.
Oh, I was about to say, yeah, I agree. Remakes is a really good way of experiencing old media, and then you've said that, and I'm like, no, no.
The thing, but yeah, with Final Fantasy, just it looks like more appealing to me. Cloud is a nice looking boy. Okay. I like Sephiroth. I like his long hair.
His polygonal look was pretty fit. Thank you.
Was it?
Have you seen his chunks? Because I know.
It's all about choice, isn't it?
It is.
That's
about
my
choice.
Opinion.
Yes. No. You're totally right that like if they do it right, then something like Spyro or Crash or hopefully Crash Team Racing will, you know, ostensibly feel like the definitive version because you have all the new bells and whistles. But the accessibility of it.
That's the thing with Total Recall. You don't have to go and get a VHS player and a VHS and then rewind it with a biro to get to the actual thing to shove it in your machine. Like you can just go, all right, Amazon, play Total Recall for me. Whereas with some of the older PSP stuff, for example, then you have to proper dig
out. Well, I literally had to dig out my old PSP and then I found my old save from like 2010 or whatever and I charged it and played Crisis Core and it was fine. But like that idea of accessibility, like would I even be in the market for an N64 if Nintendo had, you know, answered that question and put N64 games on the Switch online service? Like if everything was available,
why didn't they
would
do
we
that?
Even, you know, go to that?
I think that is my ultimate... All right, now we've got through all of this. I think that's the ultimate sticking point. It's that, yes, have the old games and have the originals and have all the access to them, but put them on a new shiny machine that also can play the stuff that we want to do now.
Mm-hmm. We just want backwards compatibility.
Yeah, literally, that's it.
But even then, like,
that's so hard.
It's more, yeah, I mean, backwards compatibility with anything that's disc-based, but then stuff needs to be emulation for the cartridge stuff. Which, I mean, for Nintendo specifically, they did have that on the Wii U. Like, you can totally play Mario 64, Mario Kart, and everything on the Wii U.
Yeah, got it.
They just never, like, ported it across onto the Switch. Yeah. But that's the question that the gaming industry just seems to forever like dance around, because sometimes they're like, oh, well, we'll remake it and we'll remaster it and we'll charge you £60 for it and we'll do it that way. But then other times they just throw the older version on. But I don't know, they never seem to really like nail that stuff down, resulting in all these retro sort of things.
Yeah, you want to be able to dig it out and play it on all of the original stuff, but you want everyone to have the accessibility to do it to make that popular as well, so that they don't like just absolutely die out from being able to get to them.
In like a fully corporate mentality as well, they don't benefit from people buying old consoles because they're not making any new ones anymore.
Yeah.
So like that's the whole reason that the digital storefronts dominate, is because then they can control the price points and all that sort of thing.
Yeah,
as well.
I wonder if you can compare it to like the iPhone, for example. It's they don't need to make a new iPhone, but they make it because the people will buy it
every
and
year.
Make the money.
Designed to break, innit? That's the thing.
Oh god, the whole
designed to break.
Obviously, consoles aren't made every year, and it's a lot. It is very different, but I wonder if it's kind of the same thing, like with remakes, with retro stuff, with that kind of stuff. They'll be like, well, is it going to make us money? Well, I don't care if it's what people want. Is it going to make money?
It'll be interesting after Crash Team Racing, because they've kind of mined the big PlayStation franchises. Like, we're even getting Medieval, which like people love. Like, I love the Medieval. But like, that's like on a different tier to Crash Spyro and Crash Team Racing. Medieval's like a B tier.
I was really surprised they were remaking it, because I just don't remember people talking about it loads. But then
it's like a cult classic, I guess.
Then it's come back. I'm
Dan
like,
Fortescue.
Thank God. But yeah, stick a crank on it. People will buy it.
Oh God, give me Medieval with a little Dan Fortescue literally. And his little crank. I would happily take that. But yeah, so I guess it's just that general sort of question. Is the appeal and the longevity of physical media in an age continually dominated by digital stuff. And we like it because we once experienced it.
Yeah.
But will the future us like it?
Will the future decide? But yeah, so you guys let us know what you think down in the comments below. Do you like your physical gaming media, and do you hope for more in the future? For now though,
I think I've said about 17 different opinions on whether I like it or not throughout this whole thing.
You have a balanced view.
I'm just stuck. I want everything. Anyway, we're ending.
I also want everything, preferably emulated.
Yeah.
But also in physical. Yeah. So let us know what you think down in the comments below. This has been the What Culture Gaming Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Taylor, joined by Rachel Shackleton.
I promise I'll watch the old Total Recall.
And Final Fantasy VII and Nash Millman.
Oh, goodbye. I'm going to watch the old Total Recall again.
And
as
Final
well.
Fantasy VII. And we'll catch you next time. Bye. Bye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.